When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club. And get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. So, after all the stories of Gary Lineker, Alan Smith, Romario, Brolin, Ravelli, Henrik Larsson, we've decided to stay traditional because following part one is part two. This is still The Big Interview with Graham Hunter, and our guest is Jockey Bjorklund. Jockey's dry, witty, funny, but he's a very good witness to what's been going on in European football since the early 90s. My era. As a journalist, not as a player. This time, I wanted to get inside Jockey's time at Valencia, where he played with copious legends. Think about that team. Piojo López, Angloma, Carboni, Cañizares, the emerging Albelda, Baraja, and the mighty Gaizka Mendieta. Jockey played under both Claudio Ranieri, reaching a cup final, winning it, and Hector Cooper, two extremely interesting coaches. Remember that he marched his team, certainly in the first season, all the way to the Champions League final, and Los Che reached two consecutive Champions Leagues in Paris and Milan, with two heartbreaking results. It was a trophy-winning spell for Jockey at Valencia, and he tells us how it was that he and his teammates held the voodoo sign over Barcelona, and had a habit of absolutely battering Louis van Gaal's Catalan team. In this part of the Big Interview podcast, we'll also find out exactly how much Jockey loves cricket, and you'll learn what his all-time 11 on the cricket field is, because Jockey's special. Enjoy the Big Interview.
I love the fact that you can claim that you played twice against Romario in the Champions League and he never scored against you, and you won home and away against PSV Eindhoven.
That's the first Champions League you ever played, isn't it? We got drawn into a group with PSV, Milan, and AC Milan, and Porto. Had a couple of great wins against PSV, who at the time were a really good side with Romario playing up front. Beat them home and away.
Just a year, maybe a year before, a year after the World Cup. But the thing that I like is that Romario was such a, you know, he had a similar shape to Brolin, maybe a little smaller, but his ability to spin and turn and do crazy things should have kept a pretty young defender like you on your toes. But in each case, you win in Eindhoven as well, which is... Tell me your experience of when he was on you, or when you're shepherding him to another. Just what are the tricks to try, and apart from catching him on a bad day, what are the tricks to try and keep Romario quiet?
No, I'm pretty sure he kept me on my toes for 2 times 90 minutes anyway. But he was one of those players where I think if you played him, you had to concentrate. You had to concentrate for 90 minutes, and that was the key to try to prevent him from scoring, because he was one of those guys not really participating in the game, not in open play and all of that, but all of a sudden you switched off and then he scored. He switched off again and then he scored again, which he did for Brazil. If we want to mention Romario, we can mention the two goals he scored in the World Cup against us in 94 as well. But I think the most important thing, staying switched on. Switched on for 90 minutes. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had a chance against Romario. Really, really good. I wouldn't say footballer, but a really, really good goal scorer. Probably the best goal scorer I've played against.
Just expand on that, why you would make the difference between a good footballer and a good goal scorer, as refers to Romario.
Not to confuse anything about Romario, is obviously a good footballer as well. I'm not meaning that, but he was a good footballer and an astonishing goal scorer. Yeah, that's the difference. In open play, you got the feel. I got him under control. He didn't touch the ball as much as other strikers you play against. But then every time the ball went into the box, if you weren't switched off on, he'll get there before you, and he'll toe poke it in. That's his signature finish as well. Quick toe poke. You're on your back foot, and it's a goal. Really good, really, really good goal scorer. One of the best in the 90s in the world, I'd say. Out and out goal scorers. I probably never played against anyone better.
It's good. It's a good description. I understand the difference now. I do. Again, you put the valuation, because the following season, your group is harder in the Champions League. In fact, your group's astonishing. In reality, however well Göteborg has grown, however good a squad you've got, however athletic you are, really, with the group you're given, probably, you should be on an exceptional season, maybe coming through second, you win it. Now, to me, what I remember about it is that those were the days when in Britain it caused hysteria that Manchester United were taken apart in Gothenburg, really, genuinely. Didn't seem to be as quick on or off the ball, didn't seem to have the same mental sharpness, is how it looked. I was watching it on television, I'm not a United fan. But that result, still more, in Britain nobody noticed that PSV got beaten twice by Gothenburg the year before. But that result caused hysteria. What do you remember of the group, the process, and the United experience?
First of all, it's a different time, isn't it? It's before the Bosman ruling. You have to remember that all the teams we played could only have 3 foreigners playing at the time. Not like now, we can have more or less, you can pick the best players in the world and you can play them all. That wasn't allowed at the time. And for Swedish club, we saw like 1 or 2 players every year from the Swedish league abroad, mainly to England, at that, England or Italy, if we're talking early 90s. So we had a strong competitive side. We had a good experience from the year before. When we came second in the group, we lost out to Milan twice, beat the other teams. And we thought even when we saw the draw, it was a tough draw, but we thought we're in with a fighting chance. We're in with a fighting chance. We know we're going to be more of a team than the other guys we play. We know we're physically good. We played in a different manner that most teams did at that time. We pressed high. We stood with a defense on the halfway line and tried to put the other team under pressure. And even though we lost the first game in Manchester 4-2, we thought we had a half decent performance. And after that, we didn't lose a game in the Champions League. Won the group and got beaten on away goals against Bayern in the quarterfinals. But I think we could have gone even further, to be honest. Even further. And let's remember at that time, we had 7 or 8 of the squad that played in the World Cup 94 as well, in Gothenburg. And now, if you look at Swedish League, maybe where you have one player from the whole league who plays for Sweden. So it's different times.
If I'm going to blame anybody for you not going further and not winning the Champions League that year, I'm going to blame, obviously, and you'll feel the same, Magnus Erlingmark. Because Magnus was a goal machine, if people don't remember him. You know, he was the one, you've just gone a little bit there. Magnus was a goal machine. What is he? He gets 2 against Galatasaray, home and away. I think he gets against Barca. You beat Barca because, you know, with your humility, you went past the fact that you just brushed it off with, we never got beaten again in the group. Well, you beat Barcelona and drew in the Camp Nou. You wriggled your way out of talking about pumping Manchester United, which you did. A game which got Blomqvist a Champions League winner's medal eventually, because that sealed his move. He plays in midfield because Scholes and Keane are banned against Birmingham in 99. But this goal machine, Magnus Erlingmark, erupts. And it's only when you beat Bayern that he stops bloody scoring. Give us the Erlingmark question mark, please. To tell us.
Great player. Great player. Handyman. Backup centre-half to start with. Backup central midfielder. Ended up playing number 9 for us in the Champions League. And I can't even remember why. But as you said, scored a few really important goals. Won 6 or 7 titles in Sweden. He's probably played every position in Gothenburg. I'm sure he even played goalie for 45 minutes or whatever. Really good team player. And I think we were maybe as surprised as the rest of Europe when he scored his goals.
Chucky, I'm not letting you off the hook. When you beat United, what was the key? What did it feel like? Because you can look at the group and say, we're going to be okay here, and maybe we should have done better at Old Trafford. But that was a day when you were as far ahead of them as the scoreline suggests, maybe further. And you must have been aware of the shockwaves that it caused. You must have been.
Of course we were. Of course we were. I mean, we knew we were playing a good team, but we had a feel of them at Old Trafford. We talked about it before that game, what we could have done better. We knew they were a little bit vulnerable, and then we had you talked about Blomqvist before. Well, that's probably his breakout game. We made his whole career. And we knew they were vulnerable at the back. Pretty slow, good team, slow at the back. We used it well, and I think, as you said, we won deservedly. Paul Ince got sent off as usual towards the end of the game, which helped as well.
Yeah, he didn't like a game in Sweden, because I think Paul was sent off for that 98 Glenn Hoddle team. I think he gets sent off when you win 2-1. I think Turn scores that day too, immediately after the 98 World Cup. I don't know what it was with Swedish territory and Paul, or maybe it was just a general thing. He loved the red card.
Probably a general thing. I played with Paul in Wolverhampton, and I think he got sent off when I played him in Italy as well, with Vicenza against Inter. Default setting, I'd say, but really good football as well. Paul Ince, that's another one who I think people nowadays get a little bit of a misconception about hard case for sure, tackler, ball winner, all of that, but a really good footballer as well, and let's not forget that. But he helped us out a couple of times as well, and that's appreciated.
you could, I think it's not stupid to make comparisons with what Keane did, because Keane at his best would win the ball and drive and use the ball and score goals arriving on the edge. You might say as a pro, this guy was better or that guy was better, but they did similar things. And there was a level when Ince was at his top level, when he was playing at a level that wasn't dissimilar to the impact that Keane had.
Very similar. Similar footballers. I think I only played against Roy, never with him, but I think Paul might even be the better footballer. Then it's all about winning and all of that, and I'm sure Roy has won a lot more than Paul, and in that sense is maybe the better footballer. But Paul, passing, shooting, all of that, 10 out of 10.
I'm going to draw you down an unwelcome path again, because I'm going to talk about how amazing it was when you reached Barcelona. You stopped me, and if you want to talk about the Super Cup, where you no sooner arrive at Valencia and you're beating Barcelona. But when you win the Cup, I don't know if you look back. I look back at my career and I realise how mental it's been. I mean, literally mental. Little elements of Gaza here and there. Lots of luck. But this, you know, in 1998-99, you're at Valencia. You've been there a little while, but in the round of 16, when Valencia come into the Cup, you're drawn in a local derby against Levante. You win that 3-0. In the quarterfinals, you're drawn against Barcelona. You go to the Camp Nou, where you've previously drawn for Gothenburg, so you walk in smoking a cigar, going, lads, this is easy, don't worry. Or maybe double snus, I don't know. You win 3-2. You take them down to Mestalla, you win 4-3. Then you beat some team in the semi-final. I don't know if you can supply their name. I mean, you walk it, it's a 6-0. Is it an amateur? No, it's Real Madrid. And then you go to the cup final down in the Olympic Stadium, in a country that's never hosted the Olympics, in Sevilla. You score 7 goals against Barcelona to knock them out, 6 against Real Madrid, and then you pump Atletico 3-0. Pick a moment, pick a goal, pick an opponent. Tell me about that cup run.
I'd pick, obviously, the semi-final. With everything I've been through as a footballer, that might be the most special moment. Because as you said, we beat Barcelona in the quarterfinals, home and away, in 2 games with a lot of goals, and then we got drawn against Real Madrid, supposedly the toughest draw you can get, in the semi-final, first games at Mestalla, and we beat them 6-0. We're 4-0 up at half-time, and that was a good Real Madrid. They won the Champions League the year after. It's not one of those unforgettable Real Madrid teams. It's a good team with Morientes, Raúl, Hierro, Redondo, what have you. And everything. It's one of those games where everything actually clicks into place from the get-go. The atmosphere at Mestalla was pretty decent as well, because they hadn't won a title in 20-odd years, I think, craving for a bit of success. We knew we had something going, but to beat Real Madrid 6-0 in the semi-final, I think that's special. And I think it's very few people who can actually say that they've done it. And I'm one of them.
I'm here to tell you about another podcast. Yes, we believe in biodiversity. It's from the makers of The Big Interview, and it's called Between the Lines, the stories behind great sports writing. Every episode takes a classic sports book or outstanding piece of sports writing and examines how the writer crafted their story. This is a weekly show, and the series so far has featured documentaries on the miracle of Castel di Sangro and Andrea Pirlo's autobiography, I Think, Therefore I Play. There's also interviews with writers like Henry Winter, Simon Cooper, Andy Mitten, and David Goldblatt. Here's Raf Honigstein with his brilliant piece focusing on Erling Haaland signing for Borussia Dortmund instead of fill in the blank, but we know it's Manchester United.
A transfer story is essentially a happy story. Three parties got what they wanted. Everyone thought that they had done great work and had got a great deal out of it. Dortmund were proud of their achievement of getting this guy. Haaland, I think, was really, really happy with having made this decision. I think the agent obviously wanted to show that why this was the right decision and why others were wrong to sort of dismiss the reasons why they went, etc. So as much as it is a detective work, it's not solving a murder case. You are dealing with something that is actually quite positive and that people are, to an extent, quite happy to talk about.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Side because you're behind you, you have Canizares. Next to you, you have a strange guy in Alan Roche. It's Jocky Björklund. Carboni and Anglam are the two fullbacks. Mendieta, who tells me and has been on this he consistently says, I wasn't a very good footballer. I just worked very hard and I could run. Not true when we come to the final and you look at the goal he scores. Farinós, who's underestimated but a worker. Angolo. Luis Milla, who'd been at Barcelona and at Real Madrid. Claudio Lopez, who was exceptional. Goran Flajovic, who famously, if I'm not wrong, had encephalitis and had a brain operation to save his career. Juanfran Popescu, and coached by Claudio Ranieri. So, I mean, just confirm what I'm talking about. People won't remember that you're building up to a final and that's going to be against Atleti, and everybody knows Claudio's going to Atleti. Strange atmosphere.
Yeah, but that final, after passing the quarterfinals and the finals, I think you have to remember that's not the Atletico Madrid of today we played. That was a team struggling a little bit in the league.
3 years on from winning the double, Jockey, you're talking about Molina, Jelly, Chamot, Serena, Valeron, Juninho Paulista, Aguilera, Babel, the Czech, Jordi Larden, Jose Marie. There's some Santi Solari, coached by Antic.
No, I'm not saying it was a bad team. I'm not saying that, but obviously going into the final after beating Barcelona and Real Madrid, we were the favourites, odds-on favourites for sure. And that's it's good to win a final, and that's what it's all about. So in that sense, it's the most important game, but I got big experiences of beating Real Madrid in semis and Barcelona in the quarters, I must say, personally.
What was the thing between that Valencia and Barcelona? Because you just relentlessly thrashed them. Louis van Gaal had Valencia as his most hated opponent of all time because you hit them for fours and fives and sixes, and Valencia consistently, I mean, the Super Cup was just another thrashing. Barcelona, what was it that Barcelona side couldn't cope with as far as your team?
Tactics. I'd say Van Gaal, obviously, great manager, he's won a lot, but when they played against us, a little bit arrogant, because they knew how we were going to play, and still they tried to play the same. We parked the bus. We parked the bus and counted every time we played against Barcelona. And we had probably the quickest, I'd say, striker now, because I was the quickest player in the league up front. Claudio Lopez, quickest striker in the league, playing against Frank de Boer and Abelardo on the halfway line. And that's, for me, is a... Then you're begging for it, I think. But he didn't want to change because it's Barcelona. I'm Van Gaal. We're not going to adapt to whoever we play. We're going to play the same. And it just suited us perfectly. Scored three, as you said, scored three, four goals against them every time we played them. And they kept on playing the same. And they had a decent side. In that quarterfinal, I think they had... Rivaldo, Kluivert and Figo up front, top three. They're a good team, but I think we beat them on tactics. We had a more skillful manager.
You know, we're going to wrap up with three things, Jockey. Not that I want to, but you have to have your life back. If you have regrets, not about season two when you go to the when your club goes to the Champions League final. And I'm not certain if you were fully fit in the remainder of the second season, but in the first season, you play a great deal in a Champions League side where, you know, going through to that final, I think that you can be regarded maybe as favourites against Real Madrid, because during the season you've been better than them. They've been very poor. They've changed coach. They've clung on. Vicente Del Bosque's gone three at the back. It's worked, but they've had a dreadful domestic season. Dreadful. And then, you know, in the final, you've gone through beating Rangers. A couple of games against PSV Eindhoven again. You deal with Bayern Munich, 2-1 draws. So you make it as far as the Lazio game. And then from that reason, I guess it must be one of the regrets that for whatever, I don't know what Cooper's decision is, you're pretty much a changed player, a bench player. I don't know why that happened. But from your perspective or the club's perspective, what are the great regrets about a season where after beating Leeds you end up in Paris against Real Madrid? And then, and frankly, I'm not saying this because you weren't in the team, and I can be honest, I was there. Valencia didn't turn up in the final. Well, over that season, when you're as close as you're probably going to be to a Champions League medal, what are the things you'd pick out and regret or change if you could?
No, first of all, I play myself. Just for a reason of playing in the final. I'm just joking. I think the problem is, as you said, we thought we went into the finals as favourites against Real Madrid. They struggled. They struggled in the league. We went in as favourites. They struggled in the league. We had a run. I think we won like the last eight games in the league. We hammered Lazio 5-2 at home in the quarterfinals. We hammered Barcelona 4-1. At home as well in the semis, and we came in on a high against a struggling Real Madrid team, not thinking about experience in big cup finals, to be honest. And if you sum up those 90 minutes in Paris, it's only one team on the pitch, and that's Real Madrid, unfortunately. Beat us fair and square. They were hungrier than us. Sounds very stupid when you play Real Madrid in a European Cup final, but they were, because they knew they had underperformed the whole year. We, on the other hand, were a little bit arrogant, I think. I think we thought we were going to win this game all by ourselves, because we had great form and all of that. I think we had different attitudes towards the game. We came in as favourites, even in our own eyes, and I think that's a big mistake every time you play Real Madrid in a big European Cup final. You're never the favourite.
Yep, sorry for the salt in the wound of having to go over that, and any defeat is worse if you think that not just yourself but your teammates haven't really competed at the maximum. That's always the sorest. Again, our sponsors are with us all the time. Thank you, Bet365. You're now working as assistant manager at Hammarby. You cavalierly left us behind at La Liga Television. We've never been the same since, and sadly, that's a fact. You are now working as assistant manager at Hammarby, which gives you an even better standpoint to tell us which of all your managers either inspired you the most or helped you the most, or you now look back and think, although you take something from everybody, I take most from that guy.
I've been lucky to have quite a few managers I really enjoyed, respect, and very, very knowledgeable. I think one who stands out is the one who brought us to success in Valencia. You spoke about him, Claudio Ranieri, who I think in England had a little bit of an unfair reputation until he won the league with Leicester. I'm very happy for him, very good tactician, defensive-minded coach, but then again, excuse him, he's Italian, so what do you expect? But then again, Walter, you know Walter Smith, Rangers, first and foremost, fantastic man, fantastic person, interested in you as a human being, as a person, not only your football skills. Hopefully, you have to ask my players, but I try to have the same approach as Walter towards my players, not being one of the guys, but try to be interested and positive. That's one of the guys I appreciate the most. Mick McCarthy, thoroughly good man as well. He's had a long career in football. Old school in one sense, but still young enough to be interested in developing the play, developing your players, still young enough to be interested in your players. So I've been lucky. I've had a few really good ones, I must say. Prandelli I had in Italy, went on to have a great success with the Italian national team, got sacked after 7 games in Venezia.
Without asking you to be anything stupid and dictate to Henrik. Henrik's back in this city now. And, you know, as a player, I don't know any player who was there as brief a time and began to have to impact as a substitute who was then literally adored. You're used to seeing Henke adored for Sweden, for the clubs that he scored for and coached at Manchester United too. But at Barcelona, at Celtic, it's, if you could encapsulate the same love that Celtic fans have for Henrik and say that over a smaller time it felt the same at Barcelona, his impact was literally extraordinary. Now he's back having to help Ronald Koeman coach Ansu Fati, who is very new but his talent is phenomenal. It needs to be guided and moulded. He's back having to help Ronald Koeman deal with Leo Messi. What do you think Henrik brings to this situation at Football Club Barcelona? Because he had a relatively hard time as a coach back in Sweden, not reflecting on him necessarily, but it didn't go the way he wanted.
Yeah, I think that's more due to the circumstances in the clubs he managed in Sweden than his own knowledge of football, I think. Yeah, I think, first and foremost, I'm very happy and proud, because I'm a Swede after all, and he's a friend of mine. That we have a guy who's actually part of the managing team in Barcelona and working. I still haven't fully understood what his exact role is in Barcelona, what's it going to be, but I know Ronald Koeman trusts him and to work with young guys, especially strikers. I think he'll be the perfect match. He's been there, he's done it as a player. I'm really happy for him. A little bit jealous as well.
Would I be right in saying that because Henrik, I mean, his passion, his explosiveness was all in his private life or in training. He can put on a very cold, clinical head. And he also has a very reserved, careful manner because he assesses and thinks. But bringing, not just Barcelona, bringing a man like that with his experience, but also his pretty cold, balanced, clinical head into quite an explosive situation, that should be a help to the people around him, that he isn't going to get swayed by all the nonsense that goes on around him, I think.
That's probably why they hired him. I think they need a cool guy in Barcelona. I mean, we all know what happened last year. Results haven't been there. It's been a turbulent season, and I think he might be one of the guys to calm it down a little bit and get it moving forward again, because I think not only Barcelona needs it, I think Spanish football, to be honest, needs it as well. Need a club like Barcelona to perform better than they did last season.
That's a good point. The last one is, you're outside club time at the moment, so the deal that you made with your boy means that you're his dad now. So when I ask you to describe Kala a little bit, honestly, what kind of footballer he is, what kind of aspirations you have for him, how he's doing generally now, generally, broadly, for Hammarby, take some dad pride and tell us a little bit about one of your boys who's got the highest profile now, and he's got your sense of humour, because I seem to remember he scored a goal a couple of weeks ago and made some comment about your goal-scoring record. So, like father, like son.
I always had an opinion that records are there to be broken, right? Even the ones who seem unbeatable. One goal. No, he's doing well. He's doing really well. He's had a tough couple of years. He did his ACL, had an operation.
Yeah.
And then when he had his operation, he had a fracture in his kneecap. He's been training really hard, really, really hard. And this year he's got the opportunity to play. And he's performed well. Big, strong guy. He's bigger than me. Probably stronger than me as well. Good going into duels. If you compare him to his dad, you could see that he's raised in Spanish football. With the ball, yeah. Let's put it that way, yeah.
Then the image I want to leave our listeners with is of the bemused Spanish residents in your Valencia apartment complex when they heard shouts of, "What's that?" as you tuned into the cricket. Sign off by telling people what the hell it is that you love so much about cricket.
I got stuck. I watched it first time in. We went with Sweden to Australia on a pre-season tour, early 92, January. Watched a bit of cricket with Patrick at the hotel room. We didn't understand a thing about it, but we thought it looks good. Big crowd, was MCG. It might even have been Boxing Day. Ashes. Yeah.
D-test.
And then I moved to Scotland, and then you can see it on Sky. And I think what got me hitched is not the game per se, but it's the commentating. I think Sky's done really well. They've brought a lot of old players, really good players, funny, witty. And that's why I started to like it. And now it's me and my younger son, William, who's keeping flair up here in Sweden. It's not much cricket around here. I can give you all-time cricket 11 as well, if you want.
This is Jockey's 11.
And I'm only talking about players I've seen playing. Want three fast bowlers, right? I'll have Glenn McGrath, easy enough. Curtly, Ambrose, a bit of flair, and Wasim. Then we need an all-rounder, and I'd take Jock Callis. Out of the ones I've seen, batting and bowling, probably the best, and I haven't seen Beefy played, so if you got any English watchers, we will make an excuse for that, right? Jack Callis as the all-rounder. No, we need a spinner. It has to be Shane Warne. Another Australian wicketkeeper, I'd say Adam Gilchrist. He can open batting as well. Five batsmen to pick, and Sachin needs to be there for sure. I think we need to have Ricky Ponting. we have to pick one English player as well. Alistair Cook. No thrills, but a really good batsman, right? Leaves us with two more, and now it's getting difficult, right? Brian Lara. One left. Must be another West Indian. I'd say Chris Gayle. Not on Mary. I just like to watch him. See him bat. Yeah.
Listen, man, that was a massive pleasure. I both hope that you are back here soon, and for your sake that you're never back here. That you're either managing Sweden to a World Cup win, or perhaps president of the first ever one-day World Cup winning Sweden cricket side. One or the other. And if neither of those happens, come back here and enjoy yourselves with us, because we still have a good time over here.
I will sooner or later. That's a promise.
Mr. Joakim Björklund, Swedish football legend, international set symbol, well-known drinker. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.